Welcome, everyone. This is Sasha, sashatalks.com. Thank you for joining me today. We're going to talk about the concept of play. And before we deep dive into it, everyone is welcome to go to sashatalks.com. The homepage has been updated with the latest activities. The publications page has been updated. That is where my insights are either featured or I am the one delivering the material in the form of articles and posts out there. It covers different genres of life, from business, lifestyle, self-development, some spirituality. Take a look. Go to sashatalks.com. And if you are a speaker, a writer, an author, or an entrepreneur, or a business-minded person who may want to engage in some of the activities that are available for those to partake in, go to the homepage and check out the site map. It will take you to the appropriate activities where you are welcome to consider and submit your pitch. And keep in mind, for today's content, it adheres to the terms of service and disclaimers of sashatalks.com. I thought, let's talk about play. Not play through the lens of social culture, but the whole concept of play for us humans, regardless of age. When we're born, when we're babies, we're toddlers, we're elementary age students, teenagers, and then, of course, if you're fortunate and blessed, you will embrace adulthood. The one thing that starts out very strong in our life is the concept of play. One of the definitions that I extracted was play means to engage in activity for enjoyment and recreation rather than just a serious practical purpose. Some people may view play to be joyful, other people make it a priority. I've been fortunate to cross paths with adults and elderly who are playful in their personality. They integrate different forms of play that engages their mental health, their emotional health, their spiritual health, their physical health, their overall well-being. Some aspects of play may only integrate and engage certain parts of you. And in the recent years, due to the nature of my work as it evolves, and I am called by different organizations to contribute my expertise and skills, I have been fortunate in different continents to actively participate in their play workshops and their play online. I've done it, I've done it offline. And the interesting part is I got to quote unquote play alongside participants that represented different countries. And it was wonderful to learn their outlook culturally, socially, and through a business lens of how they interpret the concept of play. Some areas of the world celebrate the whole concept. In other areas, they view it as you play till a certain stage of life, and then you get on with your responsibilities. And fortunately, in our Western cultures, play has been celebrated in different forms. So let's take a look at the objective of play. One of the things that it does is it improves our well-being. If you keep play in your life, it will reduce stress, boost your mood, improve your health. For some people, playtime may be going to the gym or going for a good run outdoors, hiking. It doesn't always involve the outdoors, but there's an element of either nature or life connection with human relationships that contributes to your well-being. Ultimately, the objective of play is to elevate you, not to bring more burdens and stress into your life. The other objective would be it also helps with your cognitive function. It improves your brain function because it stirs an environment of creativity, improving your problem-solving abilities. And often when people think about problem-solving through the business lens, they think that you have to be working certain types of professions, whether you're a technical person, you're a numbers person, whether you're a scientific mind working at an institution or a lab. Play does not discriminate. Play is inclusive. It welcomes people of all ages, all different types of personalities, and different preferences. And through playing, depending on the type of activities that you engage in, it also helps you strengthen relationships by developing bonds, nurturing them, improving your communication, because the play that strengthens relationships Let me address it first for, in terms of activities that you engage in person. Whether you belong to a library group, they meet once a week or once a month, regardless of the cadence, you're crossing paths with people. And ultimately, if that activity brings you joy, it can constitute a form of play because it also builds the whole idea of community. Then there are people who are fans of gamification. When it comes to education, they might belong to a group of people, whether it's academic, professional, or technical, online in a virtual world, and that is their equivalent of play, where they're applying their cognitive skills, their communication skills, their learning in the process, which is a plus. And it's not just only deriving pleasure, because not all pleasure is married with learning. Through the nature of play, you yourself are engaging in self-discovery. And that is where play allows us to tap into our imagination, exploring our interests, and nurturing our strengths. Play is there to elevate you, not to de-escalate your endeavors. And the one thing I noticed along my life experiences is that all of the people that I crossed paths with them, they all had one thing in common. They made it a priority to remain young at heart. Because it reminds you of the joy and the wonder of living, questioning things around you, celebrating life, figuring out what brings you joy. And you shouldn't have to dissect parts of your life of this. These are the hours when I'll be joyful. And then these are the hours where I am engaging in your responsibilities. Your responsibilities can be joyful as well. And the more you fragment different parts of your life, then you are dissolving the meaning of play. And with productivity and creativity, once it's nurtured, you're also inviting innovation. This is where it increases employee engagement and finding solutions. When people belong to teams and they're collaborating, there are different types of collaboration, to be fair. You might be an individual contributor. You might be paired up with another partner on a mission. You might belong to a team. And sometimes when the headcount is low, your team headcount can range from, let's say, 4 or 5 people to maybe 20. It's all relative and open to interpretation based off context. And finally, another example and objective of play that I came up with had to do with satisfaction. When people are more satisfied, at least in the example of business and people are working together, you are more likely to retain people because they are happier. And this is not because you're bribing them. They are showing up, they're performing well, and they choose to show up the following day. Productive people and happy people are paired up. It's a wonderful combination. Because not all productive people are happy, and not all happy people are productive. That's a whole nother conversation. But a happier workforce does reduce turnover. So play is not just a leisure activity, but a valuable tool for your personal and professional development that leads to a more fulfilling life. And for those who choose to work, a more fulfilling work experience. Now, based off the few examples of play I shared, all forms of play have the following in common. Play is pleasurable. It's supposed to uplift you. It's not supposed to kill your mood and add more stress. If that is what is going on, I do not know what activity you are engaging. Play is more intrinsically motivated. It means the desire has to come from within you. When people are playing, whether you're playing a game, whether you're engaging in a social activity, whether you are participating on your own, maybe play for you might be painting a picture. There's a process attached to it. There's a beginning to it and there's an end to it. Most people bring a sense of curiosity, anticipation, and possibly excitement when they begin. As the activity winds down or the feeling of play, you're still left with some form of euphoria. Play actively engages people. I'm yet to come across somebody who would say, I am passively playing this game. There's no passivity because then you're not really engaged. It defeats the whole point of play. Play is real time. You're feeling it. You're creating memories. You're creating new imprints in your mind, body, and soul. And the body does keep the score. So if you repeat a pleasurable experience, you may be more inclined to partake in it again. And play can be non-literal. You can be going through the actions of playing a game, and you may not even have to engage in any form of literal gestures. Non-literal is different than non-verbal. Now, there are six C's of play. One of them has to do with collaboration, the ability to work effectively with others towards a shared goal. Collaboration is part of life, whether you are collaborating within your family, you belong to a sports team, you're collaborating with other players, you're collaborating with people at work. Society is comprised of different types of communities, and even within those communities, there is collaboration. Next has to do with communication. How you express yourself, how you express yourself, your thoughts verbally, non-verbally, your body language, in writing, your emails, your text, however you communicate. Some people may communicate through sign language. Everyone is different. But the whole key of communication is when you emit a message, how does it get received by the recipient? And how do you express your thoughts? Because if you're creating them, then there's someone who is receiving them. Even it might not be a specific person or a group, the universe is listening to you. Content. Content has to do with the knowledge and the understanding of information that is getting processed. The subjects that you have learned in school, the subjects that you may have taught yourself on your time. Not everything in terms of content comes from institutions. It can also come from your life experiences. There are a few autodidacts that I have crossed paths with. So content, now whether the content is viable, reliable, credible, useful, whether it brings value, that is yet to be seen. Moving along with the C's would have to do with critical thinking, the ability to analyze information, solve problems, and make sound judgments. There are many people who engage in critical thinking, but they may not make sound judgments. Because you could do one thing does not automatically yield a certain type of result. But solving problems, that invites a lot of room for creativity, conversation, collaboration. There's a good chance you're going to be working with different types of content to address a problem. I've talked about this in one of my past talks that when you're looking for a solution to a problem, sooner or later the solution will show up. But if the solution does not exist per se, maybe the problem does not exist to begin with. There are times where people misdiagnose symptoms and easily throw a fleeting challenge into the problem bucket. And problems and challenges are not always the same thing. There are good challenges, and then there are bad challenges. Bad challenges may overlap with what a problem is. We are exploring creative innovation. That is where you create space to generate new ideas, new strategies. Again, we talked about solutions and new approaches when it comes to working with people, ideas, and coming up with ideas that may be novel. Sometimes it comes up with coming up with ideas to improve existing ideas. And finally, confidence. That is the belief in your own abilities and the willingness to risk and try new things. Confidence should not be mixed or intertwined with arrogance. Arrogance, sometimes people think, is overconfidence. No, arrogance comes from a place of low self-esteem, believe it or not. That's where you see the overcompensation through poor behavior and poor speech. We're talking about confidence, and confidence has to be cultivated from within you. You can't buy it, and you can't swap those qualities with somebody who has it, but you can nurture it. Now, going back to communication, it involves all types of communication, and it's really important to pay attention to how you express yourself and how you receive other forms of communication. You're not only the sender, you're also the recipient. And as always, I remind people, it is up to you to decide, given your free will, of how you communicate and whether you will communicate. Touching upon critical thinking that I mentioned earlier, that is the ability for people to put pieces of information together, whether you are assembling a debate, an argument, determining a fact from an opinion. Fiction, nonfiction, think about how you back up your opinions. Can you justify and take a stance. And that is where critical thinking is a very healthy activity. And touching upon confidence out of the six C's, it also shines light on how do you recover when something does not work out well? Do you try again, or do you look for another solution, or do you simply give up? Do confident people give up? I believe confident people are wise enough to know when to go back in the playing field and garner a different outcome. And they're also wise enough to know when to walk away. I've not ever heard of a confident person, a humbly confident person who just stayed on the playing field thinking that they're going to be there. Time is not going to change the outcome. Sometimes it takes objectivity to step back and be wise to know when to walk away. Now, there are different ways of play unfolding in people's lives. One of the ways is that you could designate play spaces. I have taken tours of companies that invited me to view their play spaces. For example, there's a very globally well-known company in California, which is located in the United States for the global audience. They invited me to take a tour of their campus, and they told me play is one of the top two things that they celebrate at their company because they are in the people business. So when people have free time, or they take their lunch break, they have the freedom to go out and use the kayak, take out the bikes, go for those wonderful bike rides, celebrating nature because they just happen to be situated right by the waterfront. They have a musical room where you can do karaoke with your colleagues. And they have another room where it's just an arcade. And are they in the play business? No. But because they are in the people business, they put a lot of priority on providing different activities, which are chosen by the people most of the time. So they could nurture their creativity, get to know their peers better. Even if they work in different areas of the business, you might not see your peer unless there's a town hall or a company-wide meeting. So they find ways to let their peers relax, have a good time, and they stress there's a time and place for it. You could play games, you could play puzzles, you could go out, enjoy nature. And it also helped me understand at that moment in time is they want to celebrate the people culture, and it is through play. Another way of shining light on play is integrating playful activities into meetings. And I've been there, especially during the pandemic, when you are managing different teams and employees, and you're onboarding members and offboarding them, and you're celebrating people's performance. I have witnessed Zoom meetings where people are engaging, interacting in conversation that focus on icebreakers, getting to know people who work in different parts of the organization. And especially as somebody like me who came as a guest, I got to partake in it. And it expanded my view on how play has evolved, especially in corporate and commercial spaces. You could create the icebreakers. You could come up with the activities. You don't have to adhere to a certain template. Of course, I should specify if you are a business person that there are HR and legal guidelines of how people interact and communicate within confined spaces and in the context of the work that they're doing. So those healthy parameters do exist. And within those parameters, you engage in play. It does not mean that the moment you engage in play, all of the other professional expectations and obligations go out the window. And these playful activities are there to foster collaboration and communication. Now, organizing playful workshops allows people to engage in improv. Fortunately, I was able to participate in one of these activities with the workshops. I lucked out because the coach who showed up to host that particular workshop at that hour, at that location, I had a peer who joined me from Denmark, and you don't know what the play activity will be. And it turned out to be very fun because no matter where you are located, regardless of geography and time zones, you were to engage from a certain place that was comfortable for you. So you pick where you're going to participate from. And then out of the blue, they give you random questions to work with. And it's also physical play in your space. And they're watching you engage in it to come up with the solutions. And the whole purpose was to get to know people and to understand how unpredictable life can be, at least in the context of that playful workshop. I touched upon gamification earlier. That is where you incorporate game-like elements into your work process, training, tasking. Because I also come from a heavily, I wouldn't call it saturated, because there's all these new ideas, products, and services coming out in the technology space. I've seen gamification through different types of apps, whether it comes from the educational spaces. I've seen that in the publishing spaces. I've seen that in tech spaces that support gig economies, different types of gigs that are worked through these apps, whether it's business to business, business to consumer, or consumer to consumer. There's a certain aspect of gamification that I'm always intrigued by because the gaming business is a $1 billion business, and it caters to not only young folks, but there are grown adults who engage in tournaments, and they're working on apps that are catering to solely adults that are available through the gamification feature. Next, we've known this since we were kids. Play encourages hobbies and interests. As you continue living life, your hobbies and interests may evolve. This is where you get to support diverse interests of employees, your teammates, whether you're in school, your academic mates. You organize activities that bring people together. It could be something simple as going to the YMCA for the yoga sessions. It might be belonging to a book club, whether it's online or offline. It could be doing a karaoke on a team building day. Different hobbies, different interests. But one of the things that the hobbies and the interests itself does is it attracts more people who are either curious, they want to develop their hobby even more, or it invites people to meet other people. So the energy remains fluid. It's not stagnant in any shape or form because it is supposed to nurture your growth. Remember, play is there to elevate you. Next, it promotes a playful mindset, mind, body, and soul. Some people are playful in their rhetoric. And keep in mind, playful does not have to get misconstrued with flirty. Playful in their rhetoric, playful in emotionally, and that should not be misconstrued with being immature. You could be very mature, but know when to be playful. And when you have a playful mindset, there's a good chance that you are encouraged to understand when to be in that risk-taking mindset and how to learn from failures. Some people treat failures as it is a plague, I have to avoid it. That might be the case depending on your situation. Context matters, but failures are very critical to your success as well. And if you don't know how to experience failure, how to navigate it, how to learn from it, then you're not fully immersed in life. Failure is not a bad word. It becomes a bad word when you treat it as it is a disease. And people who have not ever failed, at least when I'm coexisting with people, especially in the business realm, I would not recruit them because it takes a certain type of mindset to grow, to learn, to take accountability. And you're not going to pick and choose when you're working for me when you're going to be accountable or not, because some people have learned the very hard way. That's not how I roll. Keeping a playful mindset, and it will get reflected back in how you work. It will get reflected back in the results that you achieve. It will get reflected back in the type of relationships you're building. And obviously, you could use play as a helpful tool and technique to level up your professional performance, how your team collaborate, creating more space for creativity. There are times where I cross paths with people who work in product environments, and they'll tell me that I took this job with anticipation. I was expecting this because they probably came from a more creative and nurturing environment. And I noticed that the human engagement is lacking, and I am being tasked to improve the product that company is making. Play would be welcome there because you can't stick to one formula that will work in every organization. And if you're bringing creative minds to help you improve your product or service, It might help to actually listen to the people that you hire. Here are a few quick examples of play within play. One of it has to do with sensory play. I recall visiting an institution, and as part of the icebreakers there, it was a professional engagement. They paired us up into smaller groups, and then we got paired up in twos. One person had to wear the blindfold, and the other person had to present in a box what was in there, and you would have to guess. And it was a fun activity because there was plenty of laughing, curiosity, and conversation going back and forth between another stranger who I don't know. For example, in that box, there was a lot of soil, and within the soil, there were eggs, or it could have been another item, probably a plastic item in there, and you have to feel your way to what can it be. And this is an example of activity that develops fine motor skills. Now, you might be wondering if you're an adult and you're attending an activity like that, what type of icebreaker is it? Part of the activity's objective is to get people talking, and it's not rehearsed or scripted conversations, which I unfortunately get to witness at times. You're being yourself, you're making an effort, you don't know what the activity is till you show up, and you're paired up with a stranger that we'll get to know by the time you're done with that entire engagement. You have to start looking at life a little bit outside the square mold. And when you look at people just through that square mold in a particular environment, 365, 24/7, you might be missing out on a few critical variables that could help you understand better. But it's not always that, because what if you cross paths with that stranger once and that was a one-time activity? Part of these activities are there to teach you about you. So you have to look at it as sometimes life works in a circle. You have to engage with life in order to also learn about you. There are times in life where we are isolated in seasons to look within and reflect. And then there are times where your growth is very contingent and interdependent upon other people. And play might be one of the ways that you get introduced to parts of you. Another type would be constructive play. We often see that with children when they're playing with building blocks or Legos, and they're trying to understand whether it is color, size, teaching them spatial awareness, and helping them refine their motor skills and problem solving, because you could build things with blocks and you could tear them apart and then come up with something new. That's the fascination of learning. There are puzzles. You could take puzzle pieces and construct a picture. Then there's the active play that we are often introduced to from the time we're probably toddlers, but we don't intellectualize it. Going outdoors or indoors, you're running, you're jumping, you're doing jumping jacks, you're applying your body. Most often when children engage in these type of active plays, it's bringing them joy. It's helping them develop their hand-eye coordination, their social skills. Dancing would be another example of active play. Then there's the imaginative play, where children are pretending they're playing house or they're playing doctor. Now, elevating the type of play, there's also the mathematical type of play, where children are taught their numbers by working with building blocks, objects, helping them observe and interact with life. Now, for anyone who is looking into self-development and professional development activities, and you want to brainstorm a bit, whether you are a business owner, an entrepreneur, an executive, or any third party who may want to come up with a creative play engagement for their loved ones or their children, or it could be any type of genre and setting, you are welcome to go to sashatalks.com, click on the contact page, and share your idea. And if there's any particular topic that you would like me to cover, please let me know, because I am obligated through the Sasha Talks engagements to cover different genres of work, because I'm also a certain ambassador in different spaces, offline and online now. And I look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, be good, be safe, and be blessed.